Recording.
All right. Good morning. It is 8:34 and we're going to call this meeting to order. Please note that we have our Attorney General Mark Harris present. Make sure that you mute or turn off your electronic devices. And I wanted to just start by reading the mission statement of the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. And Victoria is going to do the roll call for us today.
Dr. Byrne. Ms. Krager.
Here.
Ms. Frost.
Here.
Dr. James. Mr. Logie.
Here.
Dr. Nosley.
Here.
Ms. Solomon.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Dr. Wright. You have four.
Okay. And just so the audience and both the board is aware, we have a smaller but mighty crew today, so we're missing three members. And so when we do have any recusals, just make sure, because we do need five people to vote, that if anybody needs to step out for a phone call or a bathroom break, we will obviously have to kind of take a pause. So just keep that in mind. I know it's going to be a long and fun day for us. So let's go ahead and get started on the initial investigative reviews. We are going to start with number 2-2366 in regards to Kara Wynn, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the front row.
Sure. Case 2366, the complainant is Autumn Dossi. The respondent is Kara Wynn, DVM. On April 2nd, 2022, Lou, an 18-year-old female Persian cat, was presented to respondent for evaluation. The cat had a history of intermittent vomiting and weight loss and was eating IUD. Blood and urine were collected for testing. Diet change was discussed pending lab work, as well as sirenia as a treatment option for the vomiting. Due to the elevated calcium level and the cat's age, respondent recommended imaging and a hydrolyzed diet. The BUN was only mildly elevated with a normal creatinine at that time. On May 7, 2022, the cat was presented to an emergency facility. The cat was emaciated, dehydrated, and extremely weak and lethargic. Blood work revealed azotemia and an extremely low potassium. Complainant elected to humanely euthanize the cat due to the guarded prognosis. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the respondent here, but we have Mr. Stoll. Are you?
Monitoring only.
Monitoring only, okay. And we do have the complainant here, Autumn Dossi, if you would like to come forward.
Dossi.
Dossi, sorry. Thank you for being here, and I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak if you just state your name for the record.
Sure. I'm Bossy.
Thank you.
I speak in light of you today, what led me to leave my cat Lou. On May 12, 2023, I received a letter that the investigative committee recommended that the board dismiss this case with no violations. I respectfully disagree. I also wanted to note the summary that was put together in the investigative committee meeting about Blue is very disturbing. The cold-hearted comments that were spoken to me by a veterinarian on your investigative committee about the loss of my cat was deeply hurtful. This should not be tolerated. Dr. Carolyn is incompetent and negligent for ignoring the signs that Blue had kidney disease. Her temp was below normal, her respiration was elevated, and she was drinking more water. Her blood work results show that she had low urine specific gravity and her BUN was slightly elevated. These are all signs of kidney disease. Don't you compare prior and recent blood work results? How do you explain in 1 month her slightly elevated BUN rising from 39 to 60, her creatinine rising from 1.5 to 3.61, her low urine specific gravity dropping from
1.019 to 1.016. Her already below normal temperature dropped from 99.8 to 98.4. When I took Blue to Phoenix Veterinary Referral and Emergency Center on May 7, 2022, Dr. Tracy Hanna reviewed her April 4, 2022 blood work results that I had just obtained a copy of. And she told me based on her BUN at 39, she was in stage 2 kidney disease then, and she knew where that leads. Now on May 7, 2022, she was critical to stage 3 or stage 4 kidney disease. This easily could have been prevented. When addressed in time, kidney disease can be maintained with KD diet and sub-Q fluids. I am fully aware that Blue was 18 years old, but I never should have lost Blue in this way. The past 13 and a half months have been very emotional for me. Blue wasn't property. She was my family, and I miss her every day. Thank you.
Thank you. We're so sorry for the loss of Blue.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. You can go ahead and step back. And Dr. Nasli, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, in this case, while the progression of the case, you could certainly understand why the complainant may have come to the conclusion that she did in terms of what caused this sudden and severe renal disease. However, at the time of presentation to the respondent, I think we had appropriate medical decisions made. There was diagnostics, and based on those diagnostics, treatment was recommended. And unfortunately, we have a case where we have a geriatric cap, and more importantly, comorbidities are the weight loss and vomiting issues. And then within a short amount of time, we had a rapid decline. That combined with the fact that the prescription diets and KD would be one of those are not a preventative for kidney disease, nor are they a treatment for kidney disease. The BUN of 39 is not unusual. With slight dehydration, you can get BUNs much higher. The other kidney values were normal. And so I would, in this case, 2366, move that we dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2366 with no violation. Is there any further discussion?
I was just gonna ask if Dr. Nasli, if you can just, the other values that would not point you towards being concerned about kidney disease,
okay.
Because I think that's for the complaint, and a really big part of this is
sure.
Is hearing or another veterinarian say, "Oh, right, then the Mary cat was in stage 2," but there's these other very important values.
Right. The designation of stage 2 based on a BUN of 39, I think that is incorrect. Creatinine is the value that I look at. And I think most veterinarians do as your predominant blood value, and it was normal at that time. BUN is supportive, yes, but 39 is. We also had some ability to concentrate, dilute urine, but not fixed. We say fixed at 1010 to 1012, and that's where you begin to worry that a cat can neither dilute nor concentrate their urine. So we did have some concentrating ability, a normal creatinine, and so that's where I would disagree with the finding of a stage 2 renal disease.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. So again, we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2366. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. We are now going to jump down to case number 6 and 7 because we have the complainant here. So that is case 2370 in regards to Jessica Schneider DVM, and it's a two-pack, and it's also 2371 in regards to Kelly Patrickin DVM. And Tracy, if you would read the summary for those.
Sure, the summaries are the same for case 2370 and 71. The complainant is Bertha Nichols for both cases, and the respondent for case 2370 is Jessica Snyder, and the respondent for case 2371 is Kelly Patrickin DVM. On October 25th, 2022, Belle, a four-year-old female Maltese, was presented to Dr. Snyder for a dental procedure. The dog was examined. Complainant was provided an estimate, which was approved. Once the dog was anesthetized, the teeth were evaluated. Dr. Schneider determined that 10 teeth were missing and 14 teeth needed to be extracted. Technical staff called complainant and obtained permission for the extractions. The teeth were extracted and the dog was discharged later that day. Complainant relayed that the dog did poorly after the dental procedure, not wanting to eat or socialize. On February 14th, 2023, the dog was presented to Dr. Hunt for an oral evaluation. Dental radiographs revealed that the dog needed additional extractions. On March 6, 2023, the dog presented to Dr. Hunt for a dental procedure. He extracted 7 more teeth and 1 root fragment. Complainant expressed concerns that Dr. Snyder extracted 24 healthy teeth. She contends that the dog did not have 10 missing teeth and extractions were not medically necessary. And the committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to recommend the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. And that is in case 2371. The committee also made a motion to recommend the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And that motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. In the case of 2370, we do not have the respondent here, but we have Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only.
Monitoring only. Okay, and we do have the complainant, Bertha Nichols, here, correct? Ms. Nichols, if you'd like to come down, I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board. Thank you for being here. If you would just state your name for the record.
Bertha Nichols.
Okay.
I left my glasses in the car.
Okay.
I first want to say this is very hard on me. I'm an elder person. I need to say I stand by my core of my complaint on what was done to my dog by Dr. Schneider. But I need to apologize for a couple of things. I do not stand by any demands to revoke any doctor's license nor anything having to do with criminal charges as stated in the complaint, as I don't feel that falls within the scope of the rules of the complaint, nor my own right to request that kind of demand or make that kind of demand. With that, I am very literate, I'm not very literate, nor do I write well. So I asked a friend who I consider literate to proofread and my complaint and correct my grammar. When I got back her finished proofread copy, it included along with some personal remarks that I had not made and demands for license revocation and something about criminal charges. I did not agree with those charges, with those statements, but my friend insisted on coming to the inquiry and on what she had added, and I assume she knew better than I, and I, against my better judgment, I signed the complaint, but I do stand by my court complaint with the facts. This is very difficult, again, in more ways than one, especially since all of my years, I've always been fortunate to never had a reason to complain against any vet. and this is decades and decades. As difficult as this is, I am doing it in hopes that safety procedures are put in place to protect a dog from this kind of surgery procedure, teeth removal, and ethical precautions to protect the dog's owner, like proof, x-rays, that kind of thing. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Shada, you can go ahead and step back. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on these two.
So 2370 is the veterinarian that performed the dental for Belle. In this case, there was no dental x-rays. It's not a standard of care in our statutes, and the charting looks, appears correct, where missing teeth were charted and then teeth being identified as needing oral surgery were documented as extracted. So where in this case, losing a lot of teeth seems really extreme. It's something that I've seen in general practice quite a bit. Dental disease in pets progresses sometimes very quick, especially in these smaller breeds for some reason. And so where it seems concerning, it's they usually do very well. I think they swallow somewhere about 90% of their food that they eat versus chewing. And so with that, I mean, everything appears in order, although I can understand why it would be surprising. So in this case, I would recommend a dismiss with no violations.
We have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2370. Is there any further discussion?
I think just to kind of go back, kind of like we did with the previous case, just to discuss a little bit more on dental disease in the dogs. It can be very difficult to determine and get a good look in the mouth before a dental procedure, especially on these little guys. They're moving around all the time, and to know that teeth are missing, if there was significant dental calculus on the remaining teeth, it could hide the fact that there are teeth that are missing. The removal of teeth that are healthy teeth is actually a very difficult job and requires a lot of time and work in order to remove those teeth. This patient was under anesthesia for an hour, and it would be quite difficult for a doctor, I'm not even sure if possible, to remove that many teeth, 24 teeth within an hour if they were healthy teeth. The fact that 14 of them were removed tells me that there was a lot of disease that was there, and it can be very difficult to ascertain disease on the surface. A lot of the stuff that goes on is underneath, which then makes them mobile, and again, you can't determine that until after the pet is under.
So really the way you know is if the tooth moves?
The tooth moves, like once they're under anesthesia, or we use probes to see what the depth is around the tooth, the root, and things like that. So I just, you know, we just want to make sure that the complainant understands how we're kind of coming to these conclusions, that this would be a very difficult thing for a doctor to be able to accomplish, and that those teeth had to come out, the ones that she did remove, because they were significantly diseased. And then the further visit on them showed that there were actually broken roots in there from when the teeth that had been missing already. So they probably just, they were rotting out and pieces were left behind.
X-rays are great. They're just not a standard of
right.
care. So it's tough to have X-ray vision if you don't have
right.
the tools. And needing the other surgery, I think that the recommendation for specialty is excellent. Just sometimes that's cost prohibitive for some.
Yep.
And some, you know, that's how they pursue oral, you know, dental problems. But once you get those problems taken care of, they sure are happy and comfortable. So.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I've got a question for Ms. Frost or anybody else. I could not find, maybe I just wasn't looking carefully, where the second estimate was in the records.
The second, I don't.
Well, there are a couple different times they referenced that they, there was an estimate, and you see that in there, in the record, when the pet was dropped off. And then there was another estimate given after it was under, and they looked in the mouth, and they gave a second estimate. I couldn't find that anywhere.
That they gave verbal?
Yeah. Well, they said they did it, but there wasn't, I didn't see it in the notes that it was given verbal or. I couldn't find it anywhere except in the.
I got it off of the.
Was it in the notes?
Well, the usual way it happens is, in most clinics, when you have the pet, excuse me, under and doing the procedure, and you find out what's in the mouth, if the owner has requested further contact, the vet calls them and says, this is what we have, can I go ahead and extract, this is what you're looking at. And so it's a verbal estimate. There's nothing then usually created in writing at that point.
Yeah, that's, again, that didn't strike me as odd, just because I guess that is fairly.
I mean, well, it didn't strike me as odd that they did that.
Yeah.
It just wasn't put in the record that they did that.
Yeah.
At the end of the surgery or whatever, though, by the way, at this point in the surgery, we stopped, made a phone call.
Yeah.
Gave a revised estimate.
Yeah, I guess that didn't.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Written down anywhere.
Right. I would say that commonly it's not, as far as when I'm doing it, that we don't, we've made that verbal authorization, if you will, and then go ahead and proceed at that point. Would you say that's?
Yeah, and again, it's been a long time since I've done one of those, but I don't recall doing it differently either. Normally, because the reference range for oral surgery can be so wide that a phone call usually gives the doctor a better, you know, once they're under and they've done all of the evaluation, they can give them a much better verbal than the initial presentation.
And sometimes even then you don't know what you're doing. So you go back to the dental and, oh wow, this is another, found another tooth, this one's gonna take me longer. And you usually don't make another phone call and another estimate.
Okay, thank you. So again, in the case of 2370, we have a motion and a second to dismiss. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Now on to 2371.
So 2371, this is the owner veterinarian that did not, was not part of the case, and is not the responsible veterinarian. That was the veterinarian that saw the case. So in this case, I would recommend dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to dismiss case 2371. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Okay, back up to the top. Number 12363, in regards to Carol Yeasley, VMD. Tracy, if you'll read the summary.
Case 2363, the complainant is Nicholas Davis, and the respondent is Carol Yeasley, VMD. November 4th, 2022, Dante, an 8-year-old male German Shepherd, was presented to respondent for loss of balance and not eating or drinking, and possible stroke. Respondent examined the dog and recommended diagnostics. She further recommended transferring the dog to an emergency facility for advanced diagnostics and evaluation by a neurologist. Complainant approved blood work, subcutaneous fluids, and medications administered and prescribed. All else was declined. On November 7th, 2022, complainant reported the dog passed away at home and requested a refund on the medications prescribed. Respondent denied the request. The committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to recommend the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We have, we don't have the respondent here, but we have Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring. Only.
Monitoring, okay, and no complainant either. And Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this one.
Yeah, this is super sad and unfortunate, and I wish they would have had answers. It sounds like The doctor did what they could and prescribed medications and some fluids to go home and try to provide supportive or, you know, symptomatic care. And unfortunately, it wasn't the outcome that anybody would want. It does, I agree with the committee as far as high clash of personalities. It's hard because the veterinarian, the client recognized the veterinarian, but the veterinarian didn't recognize the client, and I think that created a situation that made the veterinarian look like she lacked compassion when she was working. But I don't see a violation, so I would recommend a dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to dismiss case 2363. There's no further discussion. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Down to number three is our two-pack. 2367 in regards to Amy Gassman, DVM, and 2368 in regards to Megan Begay, DVM. And Tracy, if you'll read the summary and let us know if they're the same.
Yes, they are the same. So case 2367 and case 2368, the complainant is Tiffany Alexander. Case 2367 respondent is Amy Gassman, and case 2368 is Megan Begay, DVM. On July 10th, 2022, Rascal, a 17-year-old male Pomeranian, was presented to Dr. Gassman for respiratory distress after an episode of vomiting. The dog was oxygen-dependent. Diagnostics were performed, including radiographs and blood work. Dr. Gassman advised complainant that the radiographs appeared consistent with a left-sided heart failure, however, a pulmonary thromboembolism could not be ruled out. Furosemide was recommended with close monitoring of renal values. The dog's condition improved with treatment. On July 11, 2022, the dog's care was transferred to Dr. Begay. The dog continued to improve and was stable without oxygen support. Repeat radiographs showed improvement. Dr. Begay discussed concerns for the effect of furosemide on the kidney function and recommended follow-up with the primary care veterinarian to monitor the kidneys. A cardiologist consult was also recommended. The dog was discharged later that day with furosemide. On July 21st, 2022, the dog was evaluated by a cardiologist, Dr. Matthews, who has determined that the dog's recent respiratory distress was more consistent with a pulmonary thromboembolism. The furosemide was discontinued. On July 22nd, 2022, the dog was evaluated by Dr. Kogan due to dehydration, weakness, inability to stand. Diagnostics were performed, which revealed heart disease, renal failure, and pulmonary hypertension. Complainant declined treatment and elected to humanely euthanize the dog. Complainant contends that the dog was misdiagnosed and furosemide led to the dog's acute renal failure. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. And that was also the case in case 2368, where the committee voted to recommend the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And that motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the respondents here in either case, but Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only.
Okay. And we do not have the complainant here either. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so this is another tough case where we have a patient who has multiple issues going on all at the same time, and unfortunately presented in an emergency type situation. And given the information that those emergency veterinarians had at that point in time, they treated how they felt, what they felt was going on with this pet. And this pet actually responded very well to their treatment and was pulled from the crisis that it was in. It seems as though there was a lot of communication between the doctors and the owner in saying that, you know, yes, this treatment could potentially exacerbate or cause issues with the kidneys, and recommended rechecks with their regular veterinarians and checks with the cardiologist. I would concur with the investigative committee's recommendation and dismiss with no violations.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2367 in regards to Amy Gassman, DVM. Is there any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Now with regards to 2368, Megan Begay, DVM.
And I would give the same recommendation, dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second to dismiss case 2368. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Number five, 2369, in regards to Ted Sidhu, BVSC. And Tracy, if you will read the summary for that one.
Yes. So case 2369, the complainant is Richard Dix. The respondent is Ted Sidhu, BVSC. On November 29, 2022, Poppy, an 11-month-old female golden doodle, was presented to respondent for a spay procedure. That evening after discharge, complainant found that the IV catheter was still in place. Complainant called respondent and left a message that the catheter was left in the dog. No return call was received. Complainant's wife removed the catheter. On December 9, 2022, the dog was presented to respondent for stable removal. On December 29, 2022, complainant discovered that there were staples left that had not been removed. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. And we do not have the respondent nor the complainant here in this case. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so with this case, we don't have the ability to ask any questions, nor did the investigative committee. So it kind of turns into he said, we have no real proof that there was an IV catheter left in the leg. And apparently, per the veterinarian notes, that there was no message left at the clinic. So again, going with the recommendation of the investigative committee and find no violation.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second to dismiss case 2369. Is there any further discussion?
I had two things that stuck out. Again, he said, she said. I put that in my notes, but the medical record does not state that the IV catheter was removed. And later, when the dog was brought back in for the staple removal, it doesn't say anything about the disposition of the dog being anxious or fractious or moving around. So, I mean, I agree to dismiss, but maybe issue a letter of concern that if you want to prevent the he said, she said, put it in the record, because if it's not there, it didn't happen.
Do you put in the record that you removed the...
You put in that you extubate them.
Some of us may be a little bit more inclined to do that than others. So I don't know.
It seems like a natural, like, you put it in, you take it out. But
And there was a note with the doctor's response to this, that they had a protocol in place at the clinic where when they had a dog or patient with an IV catheter in, they wrapped the leg with red vet wrap.
Right.
And then after it was removed, it had green. So there was a visual for the team to know whether or not that had happened. So I feel like...
Which it leads me to believe that is what happened.
Right.
But on the other hand, it doesn't say that, it doesn't say they removed the IV, but it also doesn't say that it changes the wrap from red to green. It's standard protocol, but again, I say dismiss, but I don't know that any of those things would have prevented the complaint from being made and being brought before us anyway.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know if there's just...
I just wish they would have even come to the IC or one of them, because again, I would not want to suggest that somebody would ever, you know, falsely make up these claims, but again, without any, you know, hearing from either side.
As far as the staple removal, it's hard too, because I can't say that we always put, like, unless we are unable to do a thorough physical exam, that's when you're like fractious or unable. But I mean, a puppy golden doodle, is everywhere all at once. And the body condition score was 8 out of 9, so we're gonna have a little bit of extra pooching around that area, which may have also made it difficult to see if there was a staple. But again, we don't have any way to discuss this with the complainant or the respondent, so.
Just for clarity.
And staples rotate. Have you noticed that before? They'll rotate under the skin and you'll see like the tip of one.
Just the tip, right.
Like I've had situations where somebody couldn't get into their primary because it was so crazy. They brought them into us. We actually had to take an x-ray of the dog to find the staples that have rotated.
Oh, wow.
Under the skin because.
And then what happened? I mean, if one was left under.
You just, it'll eventually rotate out, but you just grab a hold of the piece you can find and rotate it and then they can remove it.
But it's not, it will eventually pop out somewhere.
It'll rotate again.
Or it's absorbed in and it's not.
It doesn't absorb, it just stays there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It could just sit there.
Yeah.
It's like wire sutures.
Yeah,
they sit there forever.
There's a lot of space that reaches.
Completely under the skin.
Okay. Yeah. But it wouldn't necessarily be.
No.
Horribly problematic.
It's horrifying to people, I will tell you. Like, we've had people come to the emergency because their vet missed a suture. For a suture removal, and we're like, okay, we'll take care of that for you, you know?
Okay.
But it's not detrimental to the pet at all. It's horrifying to people that, and to us, it's kind of shocking that that is, but.
Okay, that helps.
It's like, it's okay, we get it for you, you know? It's all right. So, but we see it all the time. I mean, and staples especially, though. I'm sorry, those things are stinkers, but they're excellent for golden doodle puppies.
Yes.
They work.
They're sturdy.
You don't have to re-suture them, yeah. So.
Okay, so Dr. Thompson made the motion to dismiss, and we have a second, so we'll go ahead and vote on that. So all those in favor of dismissing case 2369, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion passes. All right, moving right along, we are now on number 8, 2372, in regards to Simon Escalada, DVM. And Tracy, if you will read the summary.
Sure. Case 2372, complainant is Victor Antonio Valdez, the respondent is Simon Escalada, DVM. On November 30th, 2022, Blendy, a 10-month-old female dachshund mix, was presented to respond to for a spay procedure. The dog rested during the procedure, resuscitation efforts were successful, and the dog was discharged later that day. Respondent did not disclose the emergency event to the complainant. On December 6th, 2022, the dog was presented to respondent for diarrhea and coprophagia. Over the next few days, diagnostics were performed and medications dispensed to the dog's chronic diarrhea. Additionally, the dog's skin began sloughing from her back, which was suspected to be a dermal burn of resuscitation efforts. On December 19, 2022, the dog was hospitalized for treatment at no charge. The dog continued to do poorly and lose weight. Enteropathogen panel revealed the dog was positive for Giardia and Cryptosporidium. Treatment was started. Complainant agreed to have the dog sent to a specialty clinic in Mexico. The dog was picked up by a veterinarian from Mexico on February 2nd, 2023. The dog passed away on February 4th, 2023, according to respondent. Intestinal tissue was sent for histopathology, sepsis due to extensive ulceration and dilation of the colon was a consideration. The committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222-32, number 11, gross negligence due to keeping the dog muzzled for multiple days to keep the dog from eating her own feces, not taking humane measures to control the dog's coprophagia behavior, not addressing the dog's weight loss, not prescribing a broad spectrum antibiotic based on the blood results, not repeating diagnostics, inadequate client education with respect to the dog's cryptosporidium, and failure to disclose the dog's cardiac arrest during spay procedure to the pet owner. ARS 3222-32-21, failure to maintain adequate records of veterinary services provided. There were large windows of time where no medical records were maintained on the dog during hospitalization. ARS 3222-32-21, as it relates to R311502, H1, failure to obtain signed authorization from the animal owner prior to surgery. And the respondent provided an incomplete signed authorization form after the investigative committee meeting. H3, failure to document the dog's heart rate and respiratory rate immediately and every 15 minutes during the surgical procedure. L4, multiple omissions from the medical record when examining the pet. And L7A, B, and D, for failure to document in the medical record the convenia that was administered to the dog, failure to document the concentration, amount, and route of administration of multiple medications administered to the dog, including but not limited to metronidazole, sulfasalazine, dextromethor, tobutrol, perbutrol, vertidine, carprofen, penicillin, dopram, calcium, lidocaine, and Orvax. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1 from Dr. Dowd recused.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the respondent or the complainant available in this case. And Dr. Thompson, you are the lead again.
Yeah. So I can't say that I disagree with the investigative committee's recommendations. I guess my question to the board is, does that mean that we move to informal?
It's coming from my area.
I would think either informal or straight to a formal. And I don't agree with all of their.
No, there's a couple that I crossed out that I would.
Which
ones are those?
Coprophagia.
Yeah. So the.
It did what it could do. You muzzled it. And the one about any inadequate client education with respect to the dog's cryptosporidium. Well, the client wasn't listening to anything he said about that. I mean, the client made his own tape recording of that conversation, and he told them exactly what it entailed. And the guy just did not want to listen. He did not want that dog in his house.
Well, I think so. I would say I agree with most of the recommendations. The keeping the dog muzzled for multiple days, while initially when I read that, I was kind of taken aback. But I will also say that depending on how the muzzle was placed and how much the dog could open her mouth, if she could lap water, that is actually a treatment or for a broken jaw. So we apply tape muzzles or nylon muzzles or tape muzzles to keep the jaw closed with a small opening for them to be able to lap water and lap gruel. So again, it's horrific to think about that this dog was sitting there muzzled, but it can be a treatment in other conditions. The conversation about having a basket muzzle, this is probably TMI. I had a dog with coprophagia, basket muzzle, she just smooshed it on through. So like, it can be very, very difficult to keep these dogs from doing what we don't want them to do. When I think of humane options, a feeding schedule and walking the dog regularly would likely take care of that issue. So, there are some other things that could have been done. So those, the muzzle part, I would recommend to strike from that. But again, I think more of my question is taking this to the next level and then finding the violations at that point after we have more questions answered, or if anybody had any other questions of the respondent.
Ms. Sullivan, go ahead.
Yes, I'd also like to see, since the federal laws are not honored here either, I'd like to also see this referred to the USDA's area veterinarian in charge, and I have that contact information for you, Victoria.
So prior to making that,
yes.
So what I would say is if we look at number 29,
yes.
The respondent documented that the dog was picked up by Dr. Dorantes, it wasn't the respondent that apparently transported the dog. So the concern about the APHIS health certificate, if the respondent took the dog, then the respondent is in violation. If the other doctor took the dog, that's on them. So I'm not sure that it falls under this.
Interesting. But he facilitated it because he contacted that veterinarian in Mexico to have the dog transported back to Mexico,
right,
for treatment.
But that dog or that doctor made the decision to transport the dog, whether they did it with or without a health certificate. That's, he can.
And we don't know.
Right, we don't know. So I hear where you're coming from, but per the records, it doesn't look like he was the one who transported the animals, so therefore he wasn't the one that violated that piece. So.
Respectfully disagree, because he facilitated it.
Okay. Mark, do you have any guidance or as far as?
It sounds like, given the presentation, that we maybe should consider a motion to move this forward to an informal. And then after you've had an opportunity to do that, if you believe that as a result of that informal, that the options available to you are not appropriate, you can always remand it to formal hearing at that juncture. And you may have answers to questions that a referral may be appropriate after conducting the informal as well.
Okay.
So.
All right, so then I make a motion to move this case 2372 to an informal.
Second.
Okay, motion and a second to move case 2372 to informal. Is there any further discussion?
I would ask Dr. Thompson, do we also need to maybe, or do we need to have the informal to verify that? Do we need to have Dr. Escalada submit to an exam for his fitness to practice?
Is that something that we would do at this juncture or wait until after the informal?
Or you could certainly, you know, based upon that exercise, if you have concerns, you can certainly continue the informal and order the evaluation. But if you think it might be helpful to have that information prior to conducting the informal, then you would probably want to get it ahead of time.
Okay, so I would agree with Mr. Lopez's recommendation, amend the motion to still recommend case 2372, motion to move to an informal, but also to assess the fitness to practice of Dr. Escalada.
Yeah, his competence.
His competency to practice.
Competency.
Yeah. And Victoria,
physical
we,
and
hold
mental.
On.
That's what I'm for.
Yes.
Physical and mental competency.
Dr. Nosley has a question.
Mark, under what circumstances with this type of case could we move to suspend the license for 30 days at this point?
We don't have the ability, short of, you know, summarily suspending, and that wouldn't be limited to 30 days. That would be, you know, we'd have to go through the exercise. I'm not sure that we have the facts before us.
Okay.
I mean, we have a pretty serious case, but we don't, you know, and that may change once we get the evaluations, the report back.
Okay.
But with that said, I think if we could be a little bit more specific on the type of evaluation and who do you want to conduct it, what kind of professional.
Well, and also, this seems like a case we would want to have an informal fairly soon. Do we need to have that evaluation though before or with the informal, which
well,
is obviously
right.
A yes. deal,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Do you think
but
he
think
could get that though? We're talking, you know, he's calling a specialist and getting that appointment.
Could delay the informal.
Yeah, so that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, but I think we can probably coordinate once we know what that appointment is and how soon the report will be, and we can make sure that it's scheduled.
The other piece, Victoria, I believe if I have this one correct, he didn't attend today because he just doesn't feel like he even knows what to do. What I'm getting at is it would be very important that he attends the informal, whether in person or over the phone. And I feel like he kind of, isn't he the one that's kind of like, I don't know what more.
Madam Chair, my memory, and I'll look to others to refresh my memory if I'm incorrect, is that at the last board meeting, the board allowed him to modify his order to pay a civil penalty instead of coming here to observe a meeting because he had a family issue in June.
Okay.
And so he couldn't come this month, and this month would have been his last month that he could come because it was at the end of the probation period.
Okay.
So that's how I remember it.
Of his previous case, not related to
correct.
This one.
Yes.
Okay.
So my question for counsel, you can't, without a finding in this case, you cannot consider any previous cases.
That's correct.
Correct. But we can't unknow what we know. That kind of leads to my, we need that evaluation, whether it's before or after.
Okay.
And that's kind of when my initial reaction was, why do an informal when it's going to go to a formal? It needs to go to a formal.
Yeah, the nice thing about an informal though is you have the opportunity to ask those questions. They're under oath when you're asking those questions. So even though you determine that the discipline available to you may not be appropriate based upon the information, there is significant value in that exercise.
Of the formal?
Of the informal, yes.
Well, the informal, we don't put them under oath, though.
We do.
The informal?
You can suspend up to
the... Yeah, the informal, okay, yeah. I'm thinking what we're just doing here. Never mind.
I have another quick question.
Sure.
I'll make it quick. With releasing a dog with a contagious disease that can spread easily, from what I understand about Cryptosporidium, there seems to be a health issue here, a public health issue here, and protection of public health. Is there, if we find that, could we suspend now? And still hold the public hearing, the informal hearing.
So, Ms. Holland, if I could add in there, with the Cryptosporidium, it gets difficult because there are some that are more species specific. So we don't know the subspecies of this Cryptosporidium to know if it was one. So we just know the broad genre.
Okay.
Okay.
And yeah.
Why don't we try to take this in order? And it sounds like there's a motion for evaluation.
Yeah.
What we need to do is just specify the type of evaluation, when you want it and by who, and
a physician, presumably for the physical part of it, and then in the past you used
a psychiatrist,
a licensed psychiatrist or psychologist.
Yeah. I do psychiatrist.
Yeah.
An MD, another MD.
Yeah. To determine whether he's safe to practice veterinary medicine.
Yeah.
And then I do
and a gerontologist. Possibly for the physical.
A what, I'm sorry?
Gerontologist.
I think it would be hard for him to get into one. Okay. I mean, that's a great idea.
And again, because he's down
in New Orleans.
Yeah.
But it's
I also
an hour like, from Tucson.
Yeah, okay. And I do think we probably need to give him a time frame so that he can follow through. So, oh, yeah. But what is, I don't know what is reasonable. You know, yes, Tucson is close and easy. From what we're hearing, though, from other people, is that getting into some of these more specialty ones. I don't think getting his physical exam would be, but so are we going to give 60 days or 30 days?
I think you do 30, and then if he can't, then he's got to let us know, and
okay.
We can extend. Can
at least he needs
the authority, to. Extend it as needed.
And then to have and so even if he, you know, tries to schedule but they can't do it for 45 days, but at least if it's actually scheduled,
at least
within
scheduled,
the next.
Yeah.
Then, okay.
And you definitely want to have those results before the informal.
Yeah.
Ideally, but I really don't, I don't know. I defer to everybody else too, though. I don't want to push it to August, September. What if they can't get the appointment for 45 days and then that individual needs, I don't know how quickly they turn around and send us.
We typically ask for within 15 days and usually they do that.
Okay.
So that would be with by 60.
60 days.
So what if we just schedule the informal for 60 days?
Okay.
We'll plan that the informal would be in August.
Okay.
And
then
we'll
he needs to have
whatever we can to get the information before then.
Okay. So I don't think we voted on that though yet, but I think do we have everything clear as far as what we're asking for? Okay. So we have a motion to send case 2372 Simon Escalada DBM to an informal and to require both a health and mental evaluation before the informal scheduled for August. So if there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.